Tolchin, I'm happy to hear from you.
Morning, Your Honors. I'm Ed Tolchin. I represent the appellant in this case, Cortell of Virginia. We're here appealing a summary judgment decision that was issued in the Eastern District of Virginia. Now, it's our position that what the district court did was make findings of facts regarding disputed matters, and those disputed matters were genuine disputes about material issues, and that's why we're here. There are really three issues that the court decided. One of those three issues is divided into two sub-issues. We call it facilities, switched access, and reciprocal compensation, and I'll try to address it in that order. Facilities are divided into two different aspects. There's our facilities, and there's Verizon's facilities. Now, what's very odd in this case is that Verizon's position, and indeed the position adopted by the district court on summary judgment, is that Verizon can charge the highest compensation that exists out there in their tariffs for in connection to their facilities, for an entrance into their facilities, but Cortell can't charge anything for the entrance facilities it provided to Verizon, not at the highest rate, not at the lowest rate, at no rate.
Well, those are two separate questions, aren't they?
They are separate but interrelated. And
well, I understand, but in order to make the argument, you're going to have to start with the notion of the contract. This is a contract case.
This is a contract case.
3.4.3 provides the two alternative rates, or any rate that's agreed upon. But we're talking about either the tariff rate or the cost rate.
True.
And the question then is, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
The tariff rate, the cost rate is listed in Exhibit A for unbundled services, facilities, and is labeled as such under Roman numeral 2. And if you take those away, then you don't have any cost rates.
Well,
and so the question is, did that agreement continue to apply the unbundled rates in Exhibit A?
I think
that Verizon's point is, and this is what I'd like you to address, is that when the agreement was adopted, the unbundled rates were eliminated.
Okay.
The predicate to that question, is that correct that if you take away tariff rates for unbundled elements, that's the end of the inquiry?
No.
I think that's an open question.
No, it's not. And let me explain by beginning to focus the court on the, I'll come back to the history, but let me focus the court first on the interconnection agreement, the ICA itself. If you look at the ICA, and what you're referring to is the is the list of charges in Exhibit A.
What I really want you to focus on, I've read the agreement fairly carefully, and I'm happy to have you argue it, but my question is really directed at the adoption agreement. And the adoption agreement makes the statement that for avoidance of doubt, adoption of the terms does not include adoption of any provision imposing an unbundling obligation on Verizon.
Yes.
And it seems to me that was, whether the law was did make a change or not, the parties thought it made a change and was not adopting any unbundling obligation.
Well,
now, if you don't have a bundled obligation, Verizon's argument is then the rates are the tariff rates.
But the problem is...
No, that's the argument. I want you to address it. What they argue?
That's their argument.
Okay, fair enough.
But what that does is it confuses two separate matters. One is unbundling and bundled, the unbundling network elements, the unis, and the second is interconnection. What Talk America made absolutely clear is that those are two separate matters. Just because unbundling goes away, interconnection still continues to exist. And that's what Talk America said. And when the FCC filed its...
We're looking at an agreement. Let's stick with the contract. This
correct.
Is the briefs I found to be a little difficult because they started arguing what the law was. And this is a straightforward contract case. We're reading a contract as adopted October of 2004 and in 2005.
Judge, do you have the contract in front of you? Look at Section 3.1, if you would. Just take a moment, if you can. If you look
at
Section...
Tell me what it says.
It says there that this ICA covers both interconnection and unis. It covers both. And when it comes...
I understand, but I'm just asking you this. I would like you to address their argument, which is this, that the big debate is under 3.4.3 as to what rate. There's two rates referred to there, a tariff rate and the cost rate, the TELRIC rate. And the question is what applies, because they're in the disjunctive. Their
right.
argument is before the adoption, the TELRIC applied explicitly. It was attached to the Exhibit A as part of Exhibit A. They acknowledge that. But they argue that when that agreement was adopted, there was a modification made in the adoption letter. That's at 359. And that is adoption letter modified the agreement. Now, why doesn't it?
It doesn't modify the agreement because it doesn't take away the interconnection rights which are stated in the agreement. And that's Exhibit A that you're referring to. It has TELRIC rates that apply to both interconnection and unis. If you look at Exhibit A, it's just because it has a heading unbundled transport is irrelevant.
No,
the definition
you're not focusing on what I want you to focus on. The adoption agreement got rid of all unbundled rates.
We're not talking about unbundled. It's irrelevant.
There
is nothing about unbundling that has any relevance to this case.
Hold on a minute. Judge Duncan has a question.
Yes.
The proviso specifies that the adoption of the terms doesn't include adoption of any provision imposing an unbundling rate. There's a qualifier to that that no longer applies to Verizon under FCC orders, including the triennial order review. And what Talk America makes clear is that it appears that although it eliminated unbundled access to entrance facilities as unis, but not as
interconnection.
As not for interconnection or what they call, well, going back, entrance facilities are used for interconnection, but they're also used for backhauling.
Yes.
So you can have them used for different things,
right,
is the point. So the premise that the proviso takes out all unbundling obligations, it doesn't really hit, it doesn't address
Correct.
The interconnection point. So the
Correct.
Question is whether CoreTel ever purchased unis, well, ever purchased entrance facilities as unbundled network elements or for interconnection.
And if
because they're two different things.
Correct. And if you look at every order that was placed, every order that was placed was an order for an entrance facility for interconnection at TELRIC rates. Look again, look at the, we gave one example at the appendix on 196. The way orders were placed was through an ASR system. It was called the Access Service Request System that Verizon
right.
maintains. That order says explicitly, we want interconnection at TELRIC rates. That's what we're ordering. We're not ordering unis. And unis are completely irrelevant to this case. If you look at 965, 968, and 970 of the appendix, if you look at those are the letters that first were sent by CoreTel to Verizon of Virginia saying CoreTel Virginia wants to order interconnection at TELRIC rates. It says it explicitly. This is what we're ordering. We never ordered a uni. We never wanted a uni. We had nothing to do with unis. We had, and the TRO only deals with unis. And getting back to your question, this interconnection agreement provides for interconnection at TELRIC rates. Because if you look at Exhibit A, just because it says unbundled transport is used for both unis and interconnection. And in fact, if you look at the triennial order, the TRO, and specifically at Section 365 of the TRO, it says that explicitly. I'll read it to you. I'll only read bits and pieces of it because it's too long. But competitive LECs often use transmission links, including unbundled transport. That's the word that you were focusing on. Competitive LECs also use transmission links, including unbundled transport. Competitive LECs use these transmission connections between incumbent LEC networks and their own networks, both for interconnection and to backhaul.
And right.
They use it for both. Those unbundled transport is used for both.
And
that's the point.
The other question, you say that the interconnection agreement the ICA provides interconnection at Telrec.
Yes.
And that is, what was your quote, what was your site for that?
Well, the ICA provides it at 4.3, and then in the Exhibit A, it provides the Telrec rates under the category unbundled transport, but unbundled transport includes interconnection and the unis.
Okay.
That is what the definition of it is. And in any event, the headings are irrelevant, but besides that, that's exactly what we're talking about here. And
is there a dispute about whether or not CorTel purchase the entrance facilities as a uni or for interconnection?
There is no dispute whatsoever. Every document, every order that was issued for interconnection with an entrance facility at Telrec rates. There is not a single document in which anything else is said. So to the extent the summary judgment was appropriate for CorTel, but clearly there's no right to summary judgment for Verizon because there is, at worst for CorTel, a disputed as to what we ordered. And in fact, as I said, every document says we ordered interconnection at Telrec rates.
What's your argument as to where the district court went wrong on this issue?
We're here de novo.
On this issue.
On this issue, what the district court did is it bought the same confusion that Verizon tried to sow between unis and interconnection. They're two separate things.
It didn't make any distinction between purchase for the two purposes.
It made no distinction. It just lumped it all together. And then what it said is that Verizon was providing these pursuant to an ICA that didn't have any rates for interconnection, and that's just not true. It's just wrong. So again, you look at
where are the rates?
Exhibit A, under what you said is unbundled transport, but unbundled transport doesn't mean unis. It simply means this is how transport works. Look at Section 365. It says it explicitly in the TRO. It says that explicitly in the TRO. But besides that, if you just think about it, if you think about it, what we did is when we first opened this system up in Virginia, we told them that we want an interconnection at these rates, at these Telrec rates. Verizon's response, if it was accurate that it's, if their argument now is true, Verizon's response back then should have been, well, we need to amend the agreement if that's what you want. But they didn't, because as soon as we ordered it, they said, we're providing it, but then they started sending bills at the higher rate. But under the agreement,
I'm looking at Exhibit A. Show me the rates that you think are applicable.
If you look at it says entrance facilities on the first page, I believe, of Exhibit A. If you look at, I think it's 324 of the appendix.
Well, the first page is 322.
Page 324 of the appendix, which is maybe the third page of the exhibit. Do you see the entrance facilities there?
Yeah.
Those are Telrec rates. And that is what they refused to charge us, even though that is what we ordered.
One of the things that concerns me is the contract it just seems less explicit than one would hope with respect to what rates apply to what orders. We have the fact that Telrec rates in the contract may apply only to unbundled facilities, and that CorTel ordered entrance facilities in a bundled state. But that's still an argument by implication, isn't it?
No.
Well, it's based in part on the distinctions made by the FCC orders, which are incorporated into the agreement.
Correct. The FCC, these are highly technical terms. And when these companies entered into this agreement, they were entering into it on the theory that everybody understood what these were. And everybody understands that these rates apply across the board.
The contract itself never seems to explicitly say what either side indicates they want it to say.
Because because this contract was entered into in the area of 251C. Everybody knew 251C was part of this contract, and 251C is explicit. So when you enter into a contract, you enter into it with the idea that the law applies to it.
Let me follow up there. You pointed me to entrance facilities,
mm-hmm.
which are part of the unbundled transport rates.
again, if you want to give the headings credit, but okay, yeah.
Well, you got to. That's what it's identifying here.
Section 2.0 says you don't give headings credit, but...
I understand, but that's what it's describing. This
okay.
whole section, Roman numeral 2, is dedicated to unbundled transport.
Okay.
And under unbundled transport, it has entrance facilities, and you have explained to me that the rates there are TELRIC rates.
Correct.
Now, I take you back to 359, which says the unbundled rates are in adoption. We're not adopting the unbundled rates.
The uni rates, the unbundled network rates. But unbundled transport applies to both unis and interconnection. That's the difference.
Well, facilities purchased as unis
or
and facilities
purchased
for interconnection.
Again, the TRO says that explicitly, and that adoption agreement is simply reflecting what the TRO was saying. And the TRO, and again, I refer you to 365 of the TRO, where it is 100% explicit.
Well, so I don't see where it says. It says, for avoidance of doubt, adoption of the terms that's of that contract
mm-hmm.
does not include adoption of any provision imposing an unbundling obligation on Verizon.
Mm-hmm. That's unis, because the TRO said there's no unbundling obligation.
Hold it. That doesn't say that. That's categorically, that knocks out all the unbundling rates.
No, it knocks out unbundling network elements.
Where does it say that?
It knocks out unbundling obligations that no longer apply.
Well, that's the interpretation of the parties.
No, that's what it's, well, the proviso says that it doesn't include adoption of any provision imposing an unbundling obligation that no longer applies under FCC orders.
Which are the TRO.
Which is Talk America.
Right, yeah. But interconnection still applies under those orders, and unbundled transport
except
is
the
used
way,
for both.
Except the way I read this is that the parties assumed, incorrectly maybe, what those terms those orders, but they basically said any unbundling obligation.
Right.
And it's not restricted. That no longer applies is because those acts were ended, and the parties could have been misconstruing the scope of the orders. But the amendment is not so restricted.
Okay, so
the triennial review order concludes, as did the Supreme Court in Talk America, that the relevant market is sufficiently mature to no longer require ILECs to provide unbundled access to entrance facilities purchased as unis.
Right.
But not for interconnection.
Correct.
But you still have to interpret the contract. That's just what the law did. The parties can agree on whatever they want. This is a contract case, and I was found it very difficult to get through this case because there was so much law argued, and yet the parties set forth in detail what they agreed to do and what they agreed not to do. And they referred to tariff rates.
Right, but look at
And there's an alternative, tariff rates or TELRIC rates.
But look at that adoption agreement, Judge. Please.
I did.
And if you look at that adoption agreement, it doesn't say unbundling and end. It's talking about the FCC orders. So you have to read it in the context of the FCC orders. That's what the parties are talking
about.
It says
why. It's explaining why they are unbundling.
Sure.
But the language of the adoption does not limit it. It says any unbundling obligation.
By the FCC orders. That's what it says. We're not talking about unbundling in the department store. We're talking about unbundling in the communications world under the FCC orders, and that's what it's referring to. You have to read every document in context. If you read something out of context, you can make it.
Thank
anything
you, Mr. Tochin.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Angstreich.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Judge Duncan, Judge Niemeyer, Judge Wilkinson, if I can start with the triennial review order.
Please, could you just eliminate one just factual basic question?
Sure.
It is not your position, is it, that entrance facilities can be ordered either as an unbundled network element or for interconnection? Are we good there?
They can be put to that purpose, yes.
Can entrance facilities, well, I can't let you get away with that because that's not what Talk America says.
Your Honor, if I can try to clarify?
Yeah.
My answer?
Please.
Under, this was a 2002 contract,
mm-hmm.
drafted as the law existed in 2002.
Right.
In 2002, no one thought that there was an independent TELRIC pricing obligation under Section 251C2. So
right.
that independent obligation is nowhere reflected in this contract. A key distinction that the FCC drew in 2003, which it then 7 years later decided created this new obligation, is that if you buy an entrance facility under Section 251C2, you can use it for fewer purposes than if you buy it under the old rules under C3. There is not a single provision in this contract that reflects those more limited purposes. And again, there's a reason for that. When this contract was written, the only way anybody ever bought TELRIC-priced entrance facilities was as unbundled elements used for both interconnection and backhaul. That's what's in Section 11.6. There's provision after provision in Section 11.6 of this contract
right.
detailing how one would use them. If CORTEL wanted to take advantage of this new obligation under Section 251C2, it had to write a new contract.
I do understand your argument, but it's not responsive to my question.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'll try again.
In the no. The agreement with Cox provided for the purchase of unbundled entrance facilities at TELRIC.
At Section 11.6, yes.
Right. In your in the agreement with CORTEL, Verizon had a proviso that the intervening FCC order, in review of the Section 251 unbundling obligations of incumbent local carriers, to reflect the changes that that order, all of these contracts are amended in conjunction with and to reflect the evolving.
I think that overstates it, Your Honor. The way I read that section is that rather than going through the contract with a black marker and striking out the specific provisions that no longer apply as a result of the intervening orders, we are saying you should read this contract understanding them to have been stricken out. We are not, through this proviso, adding to the contract any provisions. CORE has never argued that this adoption letter added to the contract provisions that are not there currently.
And the proviso says that the adoption of the terms of the Cox contract does not include an adoption of provision providing an unbundling obligation that no longer applies with reference to the FCC orders.
Yes.
So the FCC orders, as they evolve, are effectively, even as you express it specifically in the proviso, are effectively incorporated. But then what does the proviso mean when it says that no longer applies under, among other things, the triennial review order?
Absolutely, Your Honor. In this agreement is Section 11.6. What Section 11.6 says expressly is that CORTEL can buy entrance facilities as unbundled elements at the rates in the pricing attachment. This proviso says strike those provisions from the contract.
And my question is a factual one, because I'm not suggesting that I necessarily buy the argument that CORTEL is entitled to judgment as a matter of law, but it seems to me that the contract, as you acknowledge, CORTEL, there doesn't seem to be any dispute, cannot order an entrance facility as an unbundled network element at anything other than tariff.
Your Honor, our position right is once you strike out Section 11.6 from the contract, there are no other provisions
it
in the contract.
It doesn't say that.
But, Your
it
Honor,
simply
it
says
it does not include. It doesn't say it includes things in the order that aren't found in the contract.
Isn't it at best unclear because you have the unbundled transport facilities? But the problem that I'm having is precisely that when you say that the unbundling obligation no longer, that you're limiting the proviso to only those unbundling obligations imposed by the FCC, and the FCC specifically references or referenced in the proviso explicitly says that while entrance facilities do not generally need to be offered at TELRIC as unbundled elements, they must still be provided on that basis for interconnection.
Not on that basis, John, not as unbundled elements. This is, again, a critical thing that the FCC made clear 7 years later in its amicus brief. If a competitor is going to buy an entrance facility under Section 251C2, it is not buying it as an unbundled element. It is buying it as something different for a limited purpose. And my only point here, Your Honor, is that CORE's argument has never been that it's unclear the extent to which the adoption letters import into the contract things in subsequent FCC orders. CORTEL's position has always been the contracts already included provisions that give them the right to this Section 251C2 duty. And our point has always been there is no provision in this contract that implements a Section 251C2 duty to use entrance facilities for the limited purpose of interconnection and interconnection only at TELRIC rates to implement that provision.
But the FCC obligated incumbent ILEX to provide interconnection at cost. That was the purpose. That was basically the purpose of the statute.
But that was announced, again, after this contract was written. At the time, Your Honor, at the time CORTEL adopted this contract, only one state commission had considered the question of whether this C2 duty exists. It was Illinois, and it said it didn't. At the time CORTEL adopted the contract a second time, three more state commissions had weighed in. Two more of them had said it did not give them this right. If CORTEL wanted a contract that included provisions that implemented this Section 251C2 duty, it had to either find one pre-existing or it had to use the process in the Act to negotiate its own contract. The FCC makes clear that the background provisions and principles of the law are not what govern the two companies' rights with respect to each other. It is the words in the contract. And CORTEL, they point to Section 3.1. Section 3.1 does not say Verizon will provide interconnection at TELRIC. It just says it'll provide interconnection. There is no provision in here, no comparable provision to Section 11.6, that specifies CORTEL may buy an entrance facility for interconnection, but it is prohibited from using that entrance facility for backhaul. That's the kind of provision you would expect to see in the contract. It's not there.
So Cox had no right to use, to purchase entrance facilities for interconnection purposes?
Under the 2000 contract, of course it did, but it bought them as unbundled transport under Section 251C3. I think it's critical, Your Honor.
Where is it? That would help me immensely, because it does not appear that the district court recognized the distinction in the usage or the ability to purchase entrance facilities under two different rubrics.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I think what the district court recognized is that when you pick a contract from 2002.
It didn't articulate it. I can't find this. And part of the problem that I'm having is the lack of clarity on this particular point.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the FCC order from 2002 that led to the creation of these agreements, and specifically paragraph 17, the FCC explains that AT&T wanted to buy entrance facilities and transport for interconnection. It's paragraph 217. Where did AT&T see and the FCC staff see AT&T's right to do that? Section 251C3 and the unbundling rules. That obligation is reflected in Section 11.6 of the contract, which is part of the unbundling section of the contract, and which says in 11.6.1.1, it's on JA255, that Cox could buy dedicated transport that provides connections between its switches and Verizon. That's what an entrance facility is.
Mm-hmm.
And it refers, all of Section 11.6 refers you to the unbundling prices in the back of the agreement. Those are the provisions that implement paragraph 217 in that duty. It's telling AT&T didn't say, oh, and by the way, even in addition to Section 251C3 and the then existing unbundling rules, we also have a duty under Section 251C2, and we'd like to put provisions in the contract.
So what does unbundled transport mean?
Unbundled transport means, effectively, they get the use of Verizon's network as though it were their own, to put to any purpose whatsoever they so choose. Interconnection, backhaul, transporting data between their own network facilities, whatever. It's as if they built the pipe themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy an entrance facility under this new Section 251(c)(2) duty, which was not recognized when this contract was written, and therefore is not unsurprisingly reflected in it, you may use it only for the purposes of exchanging calls between the two networks. You would think that if this contract implemented that duty, you would see those words somewhere in this contract, and they're not.
But you are now arguing, as you suggest Cortell argues, that we read it in historical and administrative context.
You say
that
it's in context.
I agree. What is less clear is that it comports with your reading of it, given the extent to which the FCC has carefully spoken to continue to encourage or to make the distinction between requiring the purchase of entrance facilities as unis as the market matures, and competition is more likely to take care of exerting downward price pressure, and imposing the obligation to provide them as an interconnection agreement.
Contracts written after 2005, and especially after Talk America, include express provisions that detail how one buys an entrance facility under this Section 251(c) duty and the limitations on the use of it, and have rates generated specific to those uses. That's not this contract because, again, in 2002, no one thought that duty existed. And that's why there is no provision in the contract that says you could, because under Coors' view, there were four ways that Cox could have, under Coors' view, there were four ways that Cox could have bought an entrance facility under this agreement. Either as an unbundled element, which it could use for any purpose under the sun, or as a 251(c)(2) entrance facility, which it could only use for a limited purpose, or under the tariff, or under some subsequent agreement. And I can find provisions in this contract that talk about how one orders an entrance facility as an unbundled network element. But there is not a single provision in the contract that talks about how one orders it to implement this 251(c)(2) duty.
What
if
about
they wanted
the
provisions,
the,
they had to put it in there.
What about 4.3.3 that essentially says Cortell may order entrance facilities for interconnection, I think that's what they say.
Any of the interconnection methods.
In accordance with the rates and charges set forth.
More than that, John, in accordance with the order intervals and other terms and conditions, including without limitation, rates and charges set forth in the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I read that, given that it comes right out of paragraph 217 of the FCC's order, to refer you to section 11.6. That's the only provisions in the agreement that discuss how one orders, what the limitations on it are. There's no second section that says, one would think there would be a separate rate for a facility that could be used for limited purposes. Verizon, for example, would have to be able to monitor to make sure Cortell's only using it for the purposes that where it was entitled to use it for under this C2 duty. They're just not in the contract. Cortell had lots of ways it could have gotten this provision in the contract. It chose to use none of them.
I don't understand your interpretation of 4.3.3, which seems pretty, or it certainly makes it puzzling.
Well, Your Honor, again, set forth in the agreement, the only rates, terms, and conditions set forth in the agreement that deal with the use of entrance facilities for interconnection are Section 11.6 and the associated prices. Those are the provisions that set forth the order intervals, the point of order intervals, terms and conditions, and rates. Cortell is suggesting that rate that's called, as Judge Niemeyer noted, an unbundled transport rate, part of the unbundling rates, was actually also, unmentioned to anybody, a rate for this other thing, this Section 251(c)(2) entrance facility that is not an unbundled element, that can only be used for a very limited purpose.
Okay.
And yet nobody thought to write any provisions in the contract to talk about any of that. Cortell is trying to add to a 2002 agreement a legal requirement that did not exist in 2002. There's a way to do that under the contract. There's a change of law process.
When did that duty come in?
According to an FCC brief in 2010, it came in when the FCC first dealt with it in 2003. In the intervening time period, there was lots of disagreement among the state commissions that had addressed the issue. And as I said, when Cortell was adopting these agreements, Only four state commissions had dealt with it: Illinois, Texas, Kansas, and Missouri. The first three of those had ruled that Cortell disagreed with the ultimate position that the 2010 FCC took as what the court, Supreme Court viewed as something to defer to.
Is, if I understand your argument, it is that the 2002 agreement, which is the substance of this agreement, subject to the adoption letter, that the 2002 agreement went as far as any obligation was known to exist, and there was no obligation that Cortell now claims the right to get TELRIC rates.
That's right, John.
Or anything?
Except on the unbundled, except on, under.
Except under C3, yes, except as unbundled elements. That was the duty known at the time. That was how competitors bought entrance facilities
and
at TELRIC
so that
rates
when
at the time.
The adoption letter was made, it was that's all it could be referring to.
All it's referring to is this: strike out the provisions of the contract that deal with obligations that no longer exist.
11.6 incorporates Exhibit A.
It does indeed, Your Honor. If I could move on to deal with the other three issues briefly. As far as Cortell's facilities bills to Verizon, there's no dispute that those facilities that Cortell belatedly billed for are on its side of the interconnection point. The district court was right to point to Section 422, which says the way Cortell gets paid for those facilities is by charging for the individual calls that are routed over them, not for the facilities themselves.
I'm so sorry. I know it's, I don't mean to sound argumentative, but I just think I'm just having difficulty conceptualizing what you're saying in the context of the pricing requirements imposed by the Telecommunications Act. The reason I'm having a difficulty is that you seem to be saying that the contract didn't require an ILEC to provide interconnection at cost. And
certain, Your Honor,
251C2 just makes that untenable.
Clear, Your Honor. There's lots of ways for interconnection to occur. If, for example, Cortell deployed its own entrance facilities, there's still work Verizon has to do to hook those up. To the extent there were any charges for that work, that would be at TELRIC rates. The notion that that C2 duty not only included the duty to let somebody interconnect with you, but to actually provide to them the facility that they would use to do it,
well,
was unheard of until the FCC, honestly, unheard of from the FCC until 2010, when it announced in an amicus brief that that's how one should understand its 2003 order.
ILECs must provide interconnection and unbundled access. How does it do that except through a facility?
Your Honor, it depends on the facility. To interconnect two networks, you not only need the wire that spans the physical distance between the two buildings, but you need all sorts of things to attach to the wire. Verizon, for example, has an obligation to modify its network, the receptacles one, you could think of them, so that they can accommodate third-party interconnection in ways that didn't exist before the Act. That's what the existing rules that were in place in 2002 imposed a duty. Verizon has to let a competitor stick its equipment in Verizon's own building.
Okay.
That's a new obligation. Those are all obligations, and this contract talks about those. But the notion that Verizon, above and beyond that, had to actually hand over a facility to another company to use for this narrow, limited purpose, unknown in 2002. And that's why, when AT&T, the most sophisticated of any of the competitors that we ever dealt with in these interconnection agreement negotiations, doesn't say, oh, by the way, we have this other right under this other section, I think it confirms what the FCC said to the Supreme Court in its amicus brief, that its original rules didn't impose this obligation, and that it wasn't until 2003 that it had any occasion to think about it. And again, it wasn't until 2010 that it told the world that that's what it meant.
I very much appreciate your patience. Thank you.
Now, let me ask you on the second point you were just addressing. How would Cortell bill just for the calls? In other words, one of the problems they complain about, the calls weren't identified. They didn't have the data to separate out the calls for which they would bill you for.
First, Your Honor, for some of the calls, they did have the data and they didn't use it. But even for the calls where they don't have the data, the industry deals with that all the time through billing factors. unlike your retail bill or my retail bill where you expect to see your actual calls, intercarrier billing deals with millions and tens of millions of calls every month. Precision is, it's a best effort system. Companies routinely use billing factors. You do a study, you update the study every 6 months. You say, well, we're going to assume 40% or 60% or whatever comes out of our precise study. There are ways to do it. They're time consuming, which is, again, why people use billing factors. But the contract is clear as far as reciprocal compensation charges. They can only be billed for local calls dialed by our customers. There's no dispute they billed them for calls that were not local
now,
or were not dialed.
There was, as part of the judgment in this case, a number entered for that, wasn't there?
For CORE, actually, yes.
Yeah, right.
In favor of CORE.
And why doesn't that that agreement on that number end that dispute in this case on appeal?
I think CORE believes, you'd have to ask Mr. Tolchin. I think
you
CORE.
You contend it does end it? In other words, there's been an adjustment for those calls, and they get $250,000. Is that, was it?
The reason for that, Your Honor, in all candor, Verizon had disputed CORTEL's bills
right.
and had withheld payments of amounts it believed were due on a current basis to recoup past overpayments.
Right.
We overwithheld. We overestimated the amount of
so that final adjustment, though, but there was an agreement, a sort of looks like a gross down and dirty agreement just to get final judgment. But there was an agreement that seems to resolve that now, isn't it?
I think it's still open to CORTEL to argue that they don't breach the agreement by billing reciprocal compensation charges for non-local third-party calls. I don't think they've actually made that argument here. So I think the arguments that they're trying to make here, yes, I think it resolves those arguments.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Tolchin.
Verizon argued to this court a few moments ago that no one knew that there was an interconnection requirement before 2010.
An interconnection requirement at Telrec.
An interconnection at Telrec. The FCC brief in Talk America, which we cite on pages 8 through 9 of our reply brief, says explicitly that this has always been there since 1996 when the Federal Communications Act was adopted. So for Verizon to say nobody knew insists that nobody has read the statute. I mean, and that's a position. I don't know how we can square that with common sense. Mr. Angstreich argues quite forcefully that 11.6 is the only thing you have to look at. But look at Section 4, which is the interconnection part of it. And Section 4, I direct your attention just as in passing to Section 4.2. 4.2.1 explicitly says that Section 4 describes the architecture for interconnection of the party's facilities, and you read down it says traffic exchange trunks pursuant to Section 251C2. I mean, it's an explicit incorporation of the statute that says TELRIC rates. And 11.6 is not the only way that you get TELRIC rates. It's right there. And it's in the statute. It's everywhere. You can't possibly argue that it is not in this agreement.
In the 96 statute.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the 96 statute.
And why did the contract allude to that in any way?
Explicitly. It cites the statute over and over again. It cites it there. It cites it at 27.1.
But I mean for the point you're trying to urge, which is that there's an interconnection obligation of TELRIC rates.
It cites it for interconnection under 251C2, and 251C2 explicitly says TELRIC rates. So it doesn't say, the word TELRIC doesn't appear in here, but those are the cost-based rates. 251C2 are the cost-based rates. The unis are the cost-based rates.
What's the language of 252C2?
251C2.
Yeah, what's the language?
I do. I'll read it to you. It says that you have to provide interconnection, quote, on rates, terms, and conditions that are just, reasonable, and non-discriminatory in accordance with the terms and conditions of the agreement and the requirements of this section and Section 252. So
what's that?
That has been defined as TELRIC. That's the statutory language for the TELRIC rates, which are in our agreement. It doesn't. I mean, TELRIC is just the industry's terms for the just
And what's your,
non-discriminatory rates.
Interpretation of why they have Section 3 unbundled for unbundled access?
Why they have Section 3 where?
The unbundled transport act. Oh, I'm sorry.
In Section 3 in what?
251C3.
251C3 is unbundled access. Okay, so there's unbundled access, and then there's interconnection under C2. You have both. And entrance facilities can be used for both. And that's what the FCC made clear in their brief in Talk America, and which the Supreme Court adopted in Talk America. And that issue, by the way, Talk America wasn't the first case that addressed this. This was addressed in 2002 in Maryland in a case called AT&T versus Verizon. The Verizon was involved in when it said the same exact thing. It just took another 8 years to get up to the Supreme Court. But the same issue arose in 2002, and exactly what I'm telling you now was said by the Maryland Public Utilities Commission in 2002. So when you look at the way this whole document is cobbled together, it is clear that this document contemplated 251 would apply. And 251 has two parts to it, C2 and C3. This document references C2 explicitly with respect to interconnection. And when it references explicitly with respect to interconnection, it's referencing the TELRIC rates that are in C2D. And when it's referencing the TELRIC rates in C2D, it's setting them out in the attachment under the category unbundled transport, because unbundled transport in the industry is used for both interconnection and unis. And that's how this contract is all read together. You've got to read a contract as a whole. You can't just say, look at 11.6, it's talking about unis there. Yeah, but in Section 4, it's talking about interconnection. Both of them exist, and the Supreme Court has made clear that Verizon's reading of this contract is just wrong, because you have the right to interconnect, and you have the right to interconnect at TELRIC rates. Now, let me briefly address, if I could, the other issues.
Does it address that in the remand order?
In the TRRO?
Yes.
It addresses it explicitly in the TRO in Section 365. I'm not sure. I believe it addresses it.
I can find it. Thank you.
TRRO, too. Just briefly, this issue with Cortel's facilities, there are so many issues of fact there. We have 300 pages. We put them in the record because Verizon says they never placed an order. So we put 300 pages in this. It starts on page, I think, 1201 to 1300. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's somewhere in there. It ends at page 1300 of our appendix. 300 pages of orders, 1021, I'm sorry, to 1300, where Verizon ordered facilities from Cortel, said, give us facilities. And it said, bill us for those facilities, right in those orders. We showed it to you. It says, bill us in those facilities. And Cortel writes back saying, we give you a FOC, a firm order confirmation that we're providing those facilities. Verizon comes to the district court and says, we don't have to pay for those facilities because we, quote unquote, self-provisioned. Well, all they meant is that on their side of the network, they provided a facility, but they still had to get into our side of the network. And this, in fact, our ICA says explicitly, the only way they can get into my client's network is through an entrance facility. The only way, that's 4.3.3, the only way is through an entrance facility. Their argument is that, well, we built our facilities on the inside of the wall. Well, that's crazy.
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? Look at that door right there. That's an entrance
facility.
That door is an entrance facility, Judge. On the hall is the tunnel, and here is my client's office. What my client did is he put the hinge on that door? It put the hinge on the inside because it just fit better there. They're saying that hinge is not part of the door because it's on the inside. That's exactly what their argument is. There's nothing in this record.
They're saying that their own facility solves the problem, that we don't need your facility.
Then it's
on the other side.
Then they can't communicate. Unless we put that door there, they can't communicate with my client's facility. We built the facility because they ordered it. That's why they ordered it. If they're right, they self-provision, why are there 300 pages of orders to my client to provide facilities? That makes no sense. And of course it makes no sense. And these are the questions of fact, which the district court simply said, well, I'm not looking at any of this because I don't know why the district court said on this one. But it essentially said, we don't buy any argument because they self-provisioned. Well, they only self-provision on that end of the hallway. They never self-provision on this
end
of the hallway.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll come down and greet counsel and take a brief recess.
Thank you.